tell the people what you're here for.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
An oppressed person will fight back.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Greetings, Toronto. You're listening to Radio Basics here on CHOY 105.5. My name is Steve DeSilva. We are Radio Basics, and we are the radio wing of Basics Free Community Newsletter. If you didn't already know, the GAG20 Circus is coming to town this weekend with all the clowns and their entourages. And it would be a funny and entertaining circus were it not actually a tragedy for the billions of people in the world, the millions of working class people here in Canada, who are affected by the economic policies represented by these world leaders who will be in Toronto and in Huntsville the end of this week and this coming weekend. I want to take a couple of calls from our callers over the next little while. I want to hear what you think about the GHG20 and this circus that is what it is. 416-736-5656. Give us a shout. Let us know what you think. You know, as I was trying to enjoy the Portugal-North Korea soccer game this morning, the beautiful blue skies that I could see from the patio I was sitting on was pockmarked with two Canadian military helicopters patrolling the skies, two Griffin military helicopters. And these military helicopters, as well as the so-called non-lethal weapons that the Toronto police and the military forces will be deploying on the population this coming weekend, are part of the $1 billion security package that the Canadian government is spending to so-called, quote-unquote, secure the Canadian people. From what? Let me know. Let me know what you think. That's a question. That's a big question mark. What is it ultimately that they're securing us against? $1 billion. Just to put this into context for people who don't know, the last G20 summit held in Britain last year in 2009, I believe, had a security budget of $30 million. $30 million. And now here in Toronto and in Huntsville, the GHG20 security budget collectively is going to be $930 million estimated. That's nearly $1 billion in a city that already spends $1 billion on its police forces. Now, unless you've been living under a rock for the last 2 months, you would have been bombarded with media stories of the dangers, the inconveniences, the dislocations that protesters will allegedly cause to people in Toronto over the process of the next week and on the weekend. But really, we have to ask ourselves, $1 billion in a city, for example, of 3 million people, where police forces already spend $1 billion, this amount of money being spent over a period of 3 or 4 days to so-called secure Toronto, who exactly is it they're trying to secure us against? Let us know what you think. 416-736-5656. And let's try to get beyond the parameters of the debate as it has been so far, which has been people versus protesters, right? Canadians, Torontonians, Ontarians versus the protesters, right? $1 billion spent out of the public budget of the federal government on protesters. I want to know what you think. I'm going to put on a song, and I'm going to come back with a caller. This is The Oath by Street Sweeper Social Club. We'll be back in a minute.
The lamppost could swear it'd see me before, and stared as I stumbled through the motel door. The dirty mirror also thought I looked familiar, but commented only that my suit was brilliant. The TV bolted to the wall and cracked. Remembered how I cried and said I'd never come back. In the lacquer of the table, I had carved my oath with a burnt butter knife, and this is what I wrote.
All right, Toronto, we got a caller. This is Press the Foot. You're on the line, brother. What do you got to say?
Hey, good afternoon, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Happy Father's Day, sir.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day. I'm not a father myself. Are you a father?
Yeah.
Happy Father's Day to you, brother.
Thank you very much, sir.
So what do you think about Toronto, or actually the federal government, spending $1 billion?
But just a minute. He's spending $1 billion. He's spending my money for 30 years in this culture working.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But I hope, what I get to understand, maybe it work out for G7, the richest country in the world. Why don't they have those $1 million? Give it to the poor people. Need some house, some water. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, these are some good points, brother.
You know what I'm saying? And, really see our prime minister, who is here,
mm-hmm.
doing these things. The money that you want to spend, give it to the poor people.
Well,
all over the world.
That certainly sounds like a solution to the problems which every year the G8 pretends to solve: global poverty, environmental crises, security. It seems like the G8 is trying to solve these problems, but never does.
Okay, you get my point.
Yeah, I get your point, bro.
I was just going to say that to you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anything else you want to say, brother?
Pardon me?
Anything else you want to say?
Well, you know, like, for my tax, I come here work so hard. They're spending my money.
Mm-hmm.
To do the things. Give it to the poor people.
What do you think about them spending, you know, this is another point I want to bring up in the show. As we get started today, you know, the Canadian military is actually being deployed right now alongside Canadian police forces from the OPP, RCMP, down to the Toronto Police. The Canadian forces are actually in the streets right now, patrolling.
I know, but apparently,
mm-hmm.
they do their things. We can't tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
We vote for them, and, you know, they don't listen to the neighborhood where you're living in or whatsoever. They don't listen to you. You go phone the office, they don't respond back to you. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, you are paying them. They don't work. They just sit in there. Make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And when they make a decision, you can't demonstrate, you can't say nothing. If you go there, the cops is lock you up. You go to jail. And this is a free, you can speak free. I don't think so.
Do you think?
I mean, if somebody go there and make problem breaking things, breaking store, throw bottles or whatsoever. I don't agree with that.
Do you actually think they've spent $1 billion just for, you know, the few hundred people who may participate in those actions?
But they should even take those money and give to the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me.
Well,
they didn't give you one instant.
Mm-hmm.
You got friends. I got friends here before I came to this country. I wouldn't say where I'm from. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And they were alive. And they are suffering.
Yes, brother.
And they work. So why are you spending so much money? Give it to the poor people.
Well,
Come on.
Press the foot, brother. Thank you very much for your comment. We got to take a few more calls.
Okay,
thanks for calling in, brother.
And have a nice day.
Much
man.
Love.
Nice
Good
afternoon.
Night.
Thank you.
CHOY 105.5. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about the federal government spending $1 billion on police and military patrolling the streets for the G20 summits. 416-736-5656.
Cause where they see me before and stared as I stumbled through the motel door. The dirty mirror also thought I looked familiar, but commented only that my suit was brilliant. The TV bolted to the wall and cracked. Remembered how I cried and said I'd never come back. In the lacquer of the table I carved my oath with a burnt butter knife, and this is what I wrote. Off my neck instead. I shall demand my respect. I fight, even if I won't win. All right, the beginning is the end. I pledge to make the bosses cringe. Instead, we'll get some justifiers. I fight till the system is gone. Recite this exclusive song.
All right, we got Anthony on the line, brother. What's up tonight?
What's up, man? What's up?
So what do you got to say? $1 billion being spent on security for the G20 summits.
Yes, $1 billion, right? So, you know, nowadays with the advent of the internet and all the technology that we have, it should be able to, you know, come up with a way in order to link these people up without them coming to one city and worrying about security and spending all this money. Mm-hmm. Right? That's like the other caller was saying, too, like about the $1 billion and they're spending a lot of money. But there's other ways to gather people and to send information to each other without meeting face-to-face.
That's an interesting perspective. Yeah, surely they could be doing things in a way that wouldn't necessitate $1 billion security. But what if this question, right? Mm-hmm. What if the question is why is it that they're actually spending $1 billion on security? Do they need $1 billion on security? And if they were so worried about security, why are they having this summit in downtown Toronto anyway?
Yeah, exactly. Right? I guess like there's different ways to look at it. From their perspective, they're probably saying like, yeah, you know, like they're drawing attention to like the whole world is going to be looking at Toronto, so it's going to be like a not real tourism, but like it's going to bring awareness to the city of Toronto and Canada in general.
Mm-hmm. What kind of awareness though?
Well, this is say like, you know, because like a lot of people have the perception of Canada that like we're just walkovers. People can just come here and like walk over us and. You know, we're not really like a power like the United States, per se. You know what I mean? Like, when uh-huh. it comes to military presence and all that stuff, right? So I guess they're just trying to put on, like, a demonstration to the world to show them that, yeah, you know, Toronto, we can hold, in Canada, we can hold our own. Uh-huh. You know, like, times are changing. Uh-huh. Especially what's going on with the States and their you know, economic struggles that they're currently going through, you know? And we, as Canada, Canadians, we're blessed that, you know, it didn't really affect us too much, right? So... Well, I guess this is like it's a power move in Canada's part to try to show the world that, you know, we can hold down big events like this, you know.
But the thing is, you know, the Canadian government is deploying the military against its own population. So who are they really showing here? Are they showing the world? Are they only showing the world that the Canada?
Yeah, they're showing everybody. They're showing everybody that they want to spend. They're willing and able to spend this type of money.
Uh huh.
In a economic situation that we're in, like globally.
Uh huh.
You know, like
thanks for your comment, brother. I just wanted to add to that. It seems to me like what they're doing is actually they want to show the Canadian people that you know, if people mobilize and come together in the thousands, the military will be deployed against them.
Because that seems like what they're
doing here. You know,
yeah, and free speech, and it's not really free speech. You can only go within a certain limit, right?
Exactly.
This is the box, right? And people get this whole thing, especially with the states and stuff too, and all North America. Like, you know, people from other countries they come here and they think like, yeah, you know, you can say anything, you can do anything, but. It's really in a box. If you go outside the boundaries, then, you know, you're going to get shot
down. Then you'll get shot down. All right.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, brother. All right. Have a good night. All right. CHOY 105.5 Radio Basics. We got a couple feedback from some people listening to the show tonight on what you think about $1 billion being spent on the G20, G8 summits. That's all we have for that segment of the show tonight. We're going to go to commercial. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with a brother, Rene Guerra Salazar from the Farabunda Marti National Liberation Front, Toronto, based out of Toronto here, Canadian brother. And he's going to be talking to us about the case of a refugee, Jose Figueroa, who is being deported back to El Salvador after being in Canada for 13 years for his connections to the FMLN, which is currently the ruling party to El Salvador. More on that when we come back. Radio Basics.
I'm Jennifer Foster, and you're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM.
Radio Basics here on CHRY 105.5. We're back. And tonight we're going to be looking at the case of BC resident Jose Figueroa, a refugee here in Canada for the last 13 years and formerly associated with the Farabundo Marti National Liberation Front, or the FMLN, as it's known to the world. The FMLN was the coalition of political and guerrilla forces that fought against the military dictatorship, U.S.-backed, throughout the 1980s and into the early 1990s, was recognized as a belligerent under international law, as a legitimate force of resistance against the military dictatorship, and was never, nor is to this day, declared a terrorist organization. Yet, Jose Figueroa, a refugee here in Canada for 13 years, is now has a deportation order hanging over his head for being associated with the FMLN, for allegedly a terrorist organization. Tonight with us on the line is Rene Guerra Salazar of the FMLN here in Toronto. Thank you, brother, for being on the line with us tonight.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, no problem, brother. Thank you for coming on. So tell us about Jose Figueroa in his case.
Well, Jose Figueroa, like you said, has been living in Langley, B.C., suburb of Vancouver, community just outside Vancouver, for the past 13 years. He's married, has three kids born in Canada, works in Langley, goes to church on Sunday, is a very active member of his Lutheran congregation. So all in all, a regular guy, leading his life with his family in Canada, except that he's a migrant without status, and on top of that, he has a deportation order hanging over his head for the reasons that you noted. He was a student organizer back in the 80s, at the height of the Civil War in El Salvador, when just being a student itself was a dangerous thing to do. The right-wing military regime took pleasure in targeting students, in particular student organizers. They saw them as a danger, and Jose Figueroa stood up and fought against that, had the courage to stand up and organize for his people in his country. And his student organization was affiliated to the FMLN, the broad coalition of political and guerrilla forces fighting that military regime. Mm-hmm. And apparently for that, he is now basically being branded a terrorist by Canadian authorities. He came to Canada back in 1997 with his wife, and he applied for refugee status back then. His case moved along, took a couple of years to hear back from immigration, but his claim was denied because they said he wasn't a convention refugee. He then applied for he applied to stay in Canada on compassionate grounds. A couple of years later, he was granted that in principle, and he waited a few more years for the formal paperwork to come through. He heard nothing from immigration, so he assumed everything was fine back until December of 2009, when he was called in by Canadian Border Services Agency for an interview, during which he was told that the Canadian Border Services Agency had determined that he is inadmissible to Canada because of his past affiliation to the FMLN, an organization which they determined to be terrorist or subversive. So this report was sent to the Minister of Immigration. Mm-hmm. The Minister of Immigration then called for a hearing with the Immigration Refugee Board. And during that hearing, Ministry of Public Safety lawyers argued against Mr. Figueroa's admissibility on the same grounds as the Canadian Border Services Agency. That is that the FMLN is a terrorist organization, and because he was affiliated to it, he is inadmissible to Canada. And the adjudicator, the board member, agreed with the Ministry of Public Safety, agreed with the CDSA, and ordered Mr. Figueroa deported. And that's right now where he stands.
So 13 years after the fact, this man, Jose Figueroa, is being deported back to El Salvador for being associated with a student organization or student movement that supported the resistance to the military dictatorship.
Correct.
I want to come back to this point of the refugee process, because it's actually in the process of changing right now. There's Bill C-11 in the process of, I believe it's going through a third reading right now, and it's looking to really, you know, to draw a line in the sand between, you know, what the Canadian government wants to stamp as genuine refugees and bogus refugees. The bogus ones being individuals like Jose Figueroa, who come from countries that are deemed to be safe by the Canadian government. So in this case, it seems like to the Canadian government, El Salvador was a safe place to be in the world in the 1980s and 1990s. Can you give us a context of that civil war in the 1980s?
Well, I mean, it was a situation that, I mean, basically it's quite empirical. I mean, the thousands, the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands of Salvadorans who now live elsewhere, right? And their children who live elsewhere, mostly in the United States and Canada, are proof that the situation was absolutely terrible for a lot of people in El Salvador. You know, people were targeted if they showed any dissent to what the government of the day put into place. If they resisted, if they called for greater human rights, the irony is that they were also tagged as terrorists by that government and targeted for extermination or exile. And we have 70,000 people who perished as a result of that civil war. The vast majority of human rights abuses and atrocities were committed by the government and its paramilitary allies. It's a situation where nuns and priests were killed, children disappeared. We still have thousands of people who were disappeared, and justice hasn't been brought. It was a terrible situation, of course, backed by the U.S. government. And the only reason why the FMLN didn't win the military war outright was because the U.S. government sent over $3 billion in military aid to the government of El Salvador during that civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only because of the FMLN's dogged resistance that the Salvadoran state was forced to negotiate peace and democracy, bringing to an end decades of military dictatorship in that country. So, I mean, for anybody to say that that during the 80s the situation was okay for people, it's absurd. And migrants, especially in the United States, made that case quite clear to the U.S. government, which was discriminating amongst Central American refugees. It was accepting Nicaraguan refugees who lived in Nicaragua under the Sandinista government on political grounds, but it was rejecting Salvadoran and Guatemalan refugees who were escaping the ruthless right-wing military regimes that government was supporting. So, you know, there's that. Now, during the 90s, after peace, you know, El Salvador is still a very dangerous place. You have 700 Salvadorans leaving the country on a daily basis.
How many?
Why? 700.
700 people leaving every day.
Every day. And it's not, you know, it's not just working-class people now. It's also middle-class, upper-middle-class people. The situation has become so difficult for everybody in the country that nobody can get a job. People feel insecure because of crime, because of economic injustice. People are leaving the country, and it's because of the policies that are imposed upon countries like El Salvador, like free trade agreements, like corporate exploitation, foreign corporate exploitation in those countries, that people are forced to leave. They can't find a job. The jobs they do find are exploitative. Young people turn to crime in order to make ends meet, and it just fuels the fire. And to make matters worse, when they get to these countries like these, they're deemed inadmissible or the wrong kind of refugee, the wrong kind of migrant, and they're sent back. Mm-hmm. It's absurd.
You know, I don't know if you were listening to the first part of our show on the radio today. Were you?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't
okay.
able to.
We were talking about the upcoming GHG20 summits the end of the week and this weekend here in Toronto and in Huntsville, and how the Canadian government has spent almost $1 billion on security, and how the integrated security units being deployed against Canadians includes the Canadian military, the RCMP, the OPP, Toronto Police Forces, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In effect, while the Canadian military is being deployed against Canadian people, we're being told that we have to fear the protesters, that the protesters are the ones who pose a security threat.
Right.
And so this is Canadian domestic policy. And in Canadian foreign policy, which is integrated with Canadian refugee policy and immigration policy, we see that what's being said here, with the statement that's being made with the deportation order against Jose Figueroa, is that to resist military dictatorship is terrorism.
Exactly.
I think that speaks volumes. And I mean,
it
for
an
individual like yourself, we have no pretense of neutrality on this show. You can't be neutral on a moving train. You are a member of the FMLN.
Yes.
What does it mean to you that this organization is, that the Canadian government is trying to claim that this organization is a terrorist organization?
Well, I mean, it's an outrage. It really is. And
which, by the way, we should mention is the FMLN currently is the ruling political party in El Salvador.
Oh, yeah, let's not forget to mention the fact. I mean, let's also not forget to mention the fact that Peter Kent, MP for Thornhill, just outside Toronto here, and Minister of State of Foreign Affairs for the Americas, was present during the current Salvadoran president and the FMLN candidate's inauguration back in June of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Canadian government needs to get its story and its facts and its policies straight. But it's an outrage. It's an absolute outrage to me and to the thousands of Salvadorans who are proud to have links to the FMLN currently, who are proud to have links to the FMLN as it was during the 1980s. For many people, it is like spitting on the graves of the thousands of heroic Salvadorans who decided to take up arms and to take a stand against the brutal regime. How dare these bureaucrats, these politicians, brand these people who we consider heroes, terrorists? It's absurd. And, you know, and it's precisely because of that. I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, El Salvador is the smallest country in the hemisphere, you know, but we've exported thousands of people north and south and east and west. But I tell you what, we never give up. We always stand up and fight. And I think the ministers involved, the bureaucrats involved here, are starting to get that message.
Mm-hmm. You know, just to generalize it out a little bit, I mean, the Salvadorian community is not the only community here in Toronto and in Canada that is facing such a situation.
Absolutely.
And more recently, you know, Tamil Canadians are facing and have faced recent types of attacks.
Yes.
I would direct our listeners to the Basics website, basicnews.ca, to see the case of Suresh, the Justice for Suresh campaign. They should check that out to see the young individual, Tamil man, who is allegedly, you know, transferred some computer software to the Tamil Liberation Tigers of Tamil Elam back in 2006. This was before they were declared a terrorist organization. And now this Canadian is being extradited to the United States. You know, there's no shortage. Like, just look at, I can name so many communities off the top of my head.
Absolutely.
Afghanis, Lebanese, Filipinos, you know, many Latin Americans from nearly every country, Tamils,
absolutely,
Sikhs. If we want to go back, you know, in the decades further, you know, Portuguese, who many people, many tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people who at some point were involved in some kind of resistance against fascism, military dictatorship.
Yeah.
And what the Canadian government is saying is that this is terrorism.
Yeah.
It is,
yeah,
terrorism to resist tyranny.
Absolutely.
And I mean, what? Sorry, go on.
No, it's. I mean, it's ludicrous, and I think that these sorts of situations. I mean, the Figueroa case, Figueroa FMLN case, has garnered some attention, mainstream media attention on a national level. There's been some talk. There's been a lot of mobilization, and what I think that allows is for people to realize exactly what you're talking about, to realize that. All of a sudden, right? I mean, back in the 80s, the FMLN was declared a belligerent, like you mentioned earlier. Was its insurgency,
which technically means,
which technically means that it's recognized as a legitimate armed group,
yeah,
right? And its representative, and this was made through the 1981 achieved through the 1981 Franco-Mexican Declaration. The U.S. government at the time was trying to branded terrorist, branded subversive, to delegitimize the movement, the popular movement that decided to take up arms in El Salvador, and just didn't work because it was internationally recognized as just, right? The right to self-defense, the right to self-determination, the right to national liberation, the right to struggle by any means necessary against repression, against governments targeting their own civilian populations was recognized. What happened? What happened since then? Now, I don't know that the FMLN would be recognized as a belligerent. Now, with the shift in discourse, with everything being declared terrorism now, right? I mean, you stand up and fight. You stand up and fight against the policies that are imposed upon you by countries of the North. Those same countries end up pegging you as terrorists. And we're seeing this, like you said, across different communities. And I know that the Salvadorans here are in solidarity with our sisters and brothers in other communities that have stood up and fought against this, and we want to make sure that these rights are declared inalienable, mm-hmm, that they're rights that all of us should have, and all of us should be in fact encouraged to exert if need be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would direct the attention of our listeners to the 1987 Geneva Declaration on Terrorism put out by the UN General Assembly. Now, I don't know what kind of balance of forces were in the General Assembly on that particular day or in that particular year. But if you read that document, you'll see that terrorism is very clearly defined in terms of the terror that's inflicted on people by states, by military regimes, by governments, by paramilitary forces. And so much has changed, and the discourse has completely shifted. And the balance of power, I think, has shifted as well since the September 11th, which has given the big, you know, states justification to really attack the right of peoples to struggle for liberation and self-determination.
No, absolutely. That that shift has been marked. It's rather Orwellian. When we talk about terrorism now, we don't talk about governments that kill their own populations with impunity. We don't talk about governments supporting corporate activities that people aren't in favor of in their home countries and assassinating and disappearing people because of it.
We don't talk about boats in international waters being raided by military pirates and innocent civilians being killed. That was the case 2 weeks ago by Israel, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So you know, I mean, it becomes very clear that the use of this word is well, I mean, on this show it doesn't need to be said, but it's highly political. I mean, it's ridiculous.
How has the case of José Figueroa and the campaign that FMLN, and I understand you're also associated with the Toronto Latino Community Organization, Barrio Nuevo. How has the campaign around José Figueroa been received by other forces?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's garnered a lot of support. We've been fortunate to have a lot of support from our allies throughout the country. What we've done as Barrio Nuevo is launch a political action campaign and a fundraising campaign. The political action campaign has targeted the two ministries most involved in securing Mr. Figueroa's deportation order, the Ministry of Public Safety and the Ministry of Citizenship and Immigration. So the ministers involved are Vic Taves and Jason Kenney, the infamous Jason Kenney. Well, both of them are infamous, really. What we're asking people to do is to let them know through letters, phone calls, emails, let them know that they're outraged with the case and the situation. And we're asking people to ask them to intervene in Figueroa's case and to clearly and categorically declare that the FMLN is not and never has been a terrorist organization. So, I mean, that's the political aspect. We also have a petition that's being circulated at a national level. An NDP member of parliament, Peter Julian, from the Vancouver area, has tabled that petition in parliament, so the ministers will have to respond in some way or another. We also have a declaration. It's more symbolic, but I think it's important. We have a declaration online where we're asking people to voluntarily ask for membership in the FMLN, or sorry, to symbolically ask for membership in the FMLN. As a show of solidarity with the FMLN.
Anybody can sign up?
Anybody can sign up. Anybody can go to our website and sign up for that.
Which website is that?
It's www.barrio-nuevo.org. It's barrio-nuevo.org. And all that information is there. And
all right, man.
Do we have a minute for more on the fundraising?
Yeah, we have a couple minutes left.
Okay. Well, I mean, one of the things that that Mr. Figueroa needs most right now is financial aid for his legal support. He has launched a judicial review of his case with the federal court. And, of course, he needs legal support for that. And we're trying to raise money for his lawyer so that he can pay his lawyer. And what we encourage people to do is just to send checks payable to him, to José Figueroa, care of his church, his Lutheran church, and the address again is on that website, so people are encouraged to do that as well.
And I understand that your organizations, including Barrio Nuevo, are helping fundraise through a documentary film, Return to El Salvador, which is being screened until tomorrow, I believe, at the Underground Cinema. And people can find more information about that on basicsnews.ca. So as not to end on a downcast note, you know, around this time of last year, or maybe a couple months before, was a moment of extreme exuberance in El Salvador, right? The FMLN threw elections that were internationally observed, considered completely free and fair, attained political representation in the system. And although, you know, many would argue there's still problems, you know, the same forces and powers and class that has oppressed the Salvadorian masses exists and continues to exist in Salvadorian society, but there's been a breathing space for the movement and a moment for a step forward for the movement. What has been the situation in El Salvador since then?
Well, I mean, it's as the campaign slogans for that election victory said, you know, it's hope. Hope was born, right? And change is coming. And change is coming. It's coming slowly. We don't delude ourselves into thinking that because we win the presidential election, we won state power.
So this isn't the Obama type of hope and change.
No. We're certainly hoping that that's not the case. And at the end of the day, you know, we can't. We have to be vigilant. And at the end of the day, the people themselves, you know, popular movements, popular organizations, party members at the grassroots need to be vigilant, need to be on top of everything, need to be organized in order to ensure that the change that has been promised comes about. And but again, I mean, we're patient. We know that we've been in a terrible situation for decades, if not hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So change is slow, but we're there. We're there to continue the struggle. Things are slowly improving, and we're continuing to hope for the best.
And I'm sure that FMLN election success would not have been attained without an actual mass-based, you know, cadre party of tens of thousands of members that are actually doing that work, as opposed to tens of thousands of canvassers, you know, for the Democratic Party who come out and actually have no voice over the directions of, for example, of Obama's campaign. Right.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the party's very well organized at the grassroots level, and it's precisely because of those militants, it's because of those activists, because of those members that we were able to get out the vote and win. I mean, we were up against a corporate media machine that spends millions of dollars basically supporting the right-wing candidate. So the fact that we were able to win on the first round was an incredible achievement. So it speaks volumes.
So to go out on a point of hope, grounded in, you know, revolutionary aspirations and orientation, I want to play a song, and I was hoping you could introduce it and tell us a little bit about this song.
All right. It
is El Sombrero Azul by Ali Primera, the very famous Venezuelan folk singer, great, you know, patriot, revolutionary of Venezuela, but I guess all of Latin America. He wrote the song El Sombrero Azul for El Salvador, right?
Yes, he did. He did indeed. It was a.
Please introduce the song to us.
Well, it's El Sombrero Azul, the blue hat, I guess you could say, and it's you know, blue is a national color in El Salvador, and it's a song that encouraged many people that were members of the FMLN, many combatants as they were up in the hills battling for social justice, and it's always a special moment when we're able to hear that song. It brings back good memories to a lot of people who were involved back then, and it reminds those of us who were a little younger of the sacrifices that many people had to make, and the reasons why we need to continue defending that legacy and that history.
Absolutely. People gotta YouTube this song, El Sombrero Azul, which
yes,
you'll see Ali Primera playing it to masses of crowds.
Beautiful.
Was it in Nicaragua that it was played? Was it in El Salvador that song was played?
Yes.
So people should check it out. René Guerra Salazar from the FMLN here in Toronto. Thank you for being with us, brother.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Ali Primera, Sombrero Azul.
Venga la alegría, alabar el sufrimiento, que venga la alegría, alabar el sufrimiento.
salvadoreño. Dale que no es pájaro pequeño. Dale que después de alzar el vuelo, dale que detenga en su volar. No al verde de las boinas de matanzas tropicales, las que fueron a Vietnam a quemar los arrozales, y ya andan por estas tierras como andar por sus corrales. Dale, salvadoreño, dale que no hay pájaro pequeño. Viva tu sombrero azul, dale que tu limpia sangre germinará sobre el mar, y será una enorme rosa de amor por la humanidad. Hermano salvadoreño, viva tu sombrero azul. Del amor que tienes tú, dale salvadoreño, dale que no hay pájaro pequeño, dale que después de alzar el vuelo, dale que detenga en su volar.
Radio Basics, we're back on CHOY 105.5. We're here every night, every Monday night, 8 to 9 p.m. In tonight's show, we've been talking about the GHG20 summit and the $1 billion being spent by the federal government on police and military forces being deployed against Canadians the end of this week, this coming weekend, here and around Toronto. We took some callers, talked about the absurdity. Well, what seems to be an absurdity, but really has a rationale behind it. This is part of what we were trying to tease out tonight. You know, there are tectonic forces, not necessarily seen through the media or to the naked eye, that are unfolding beneath our feet. And $1 billion being dumped into the security apparatus, the policing apparatus, the state's monopoly over violence against Canadians, against a couple thousand protesters who will converge on Toronto this coming weekend. $1 billion being spent, which, you know, sums up to the already absurd amount of $1 billion that's spent by Toronto police here in Toronto in one weekend can only be explained by this government, this system, beefing up its military security and its policing against Canadians, against the Canadian population, particularly working class people, in this time of economic, political, and ecological crisis. I think we gotta break with illusions and stop believing that this is merely absurd. This is merely inexplicable. I believe it has answers, and I would encourage everybody to check out the new issue of Basics Free Community Newsletter, which came out last week, to see, read a little bit more about some of these issues and a bunch of others. We got coverage of the GHG20 and the securities, you know, the so-called security budget, you know, Israel's attack on international civilians and international waters, arts and culture articles like, you know, my man, you know, Gil Scott-Heron boycotting Israel, canceling his show. We got the coverage of the police murder of Junior Alexander Manon here on York University campus, the historical disaster of BP oil, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not all bad news though. We got some good things. You know, people are struggling, people are fighting back. You know, in a system that's crumbling and failing, that's parasitic, that's decadent, that is collapsing. You know. We got to shine the light on people struggling and fighting back and creating a better world as well. So we definitely encourage you to check out basicsnews.ca for some of our coverage, some of our work. And, you know, up this coming weekend, you shouldn't leave Toronto. Don't go to Cottage Country. Well, you know, you probably can't. It's Huntsville. You know, don't leave the city. Don't be scared to come out of your house. Converge on downtown Toronto and see for yourself what these scary protesters look like. Join them. These people are you, right? This security budget is being imposed upon you, regular working class people, the majority of people here in Toronto. You know, and I would direct you towards one website in particular where you can find out, you know, a host of the events happening this coming weekend, g20.torontomobilize.org. You can find out about some of the activities, a week long and weekend activities that will be happening, and there will be a rally as well, the largest of them all, this coming Saturday at 1 p.m. And the convergence of people is happening at Queen's Park around 1 p.m. Check that out and see for yourself the way the state is operating in these times and how people are standing up and coming down against that. That's all we got for the show tonight here on Radio Basics. I'm your host for the evening, Steve DeSilva, and let's go out with a giant, can I say, middle finger to all those forces that are inflicting so much misery on all of us. This is two Toronto-based MCs. The first track, Unknown Misery, Pump Your Fist. The second one is by my comrade, brother, Wasson, Born Into Oppression. Radio Basics, we out for the night.
Yeah, Dynamo, what up? Trapped and ready, trapped in my belly. Throw your hands up and wave them like this. Say power to the people and clench your fist. Now raise your middle finger up and say fuck the piss. Make an L with your hand and keep it up in the sky. Spread love from your hearts through the earth you beside. Now everybody in the place to be. Raise both your fists up and scream, let's get free. Put your ones up, come on, let me see them. One people, one cause, man, let me feel it. Pump up your fists in the sky like this. Point at the satellite, tell them to suck this hit. We gon' kill them with the sound and get wild in the crowd. Now stop.
Go.
Get bucked like your adrenaline rush. Get bucked like your adrenaline rush. Get bucked like your adrenaline rush. Get bucked like your adrenaline rush.
I got the Calcutta bounce and that Bengali swagger. What a chicken flow, these other gimmicks don't match up. If you need that real hip-hop, say hell yeah. If you know hip-hop ain't dead, say hell no like that. And like this enough. Real MCs take the mic back, listen up. Energy shines, I don't need to glisten up. Keep your chains, your rims, and your stolen styles. You sound like your favorite rapper, so you famous now. Riding in your Beamer, whining like a diva. I'ma be puffin' reaper, bumpin' this through my speaker. I rebel till I die. I'm